DW Africa Link.
In a twist that's blurring the lines between diplomacy and dignity, South Sudan has welcomed back the Democratic Republic of Congo National at the heart of a U.S. visa controversy. The incident has stirred debate across borders, raising questions about identity, political maneuvering, and the human cost of global bureaucracy. At the center of it all, one man, two nations, and a world watching closely. That's what's coming up. Stay tuned. My name is Josephine Mahachi. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
South Sudan has welcomed back a Congolese national at the center of a diplomatic row with the United States. The man was previously deported to Juba under a false identity, prompting Washington to revoke all U.S. visas for South Sudanese citizens. The U.S. accused South Sudan of refusing to take back its deportees, while Juba insisted the individual was wrongly identified. After being returned to the U.S., he was flown back to South Sudan on Wednesday this week and received by top officials, including representatives from the U.S. embassy. The incident raises serious questions about the due diligence of U.S. immigration authorities. International relations analyst Abiol Lual Deng, who spoke to my colleague DW's Privilege Muswaniri, began by giving context to South Sudan's broader diplomatic relations.
Well, I would say that the relationship between South Sudan and the U.S. was already on the decline. But moreover, there was a point under Biden in which the tone between the first Trump administration as well, but also under Biden, which the tone between the South Sudanese government and the U.S. began to turn very sour. So in some ways, I don't think it should come to anyone as a surprise that the relationship between South Sudan and the U.S. isn't great under Trump. I think that is not surprising at all. It was bound to not go so well in the first administration of Trump. I mean, Trump is the president who never set his feet on the continent of Africa. Moreover, even Biden himself was quite reluctant to go until the very end of his term. We've known that for both presidents, personally, Africa wasn't a priority in the ways it was for other presidents in the past, particularly figures like George Bush, who ushered in the independence of South Sudan, along with a whole host of other activists, and particularly the evangelical vote. So I think to a certain extent, it is not very surprising that the relations have soured. I think what is shocking for most observers of the South Sudan and the Sudans is the speed at which things have happened and how strong the rhetoric and the language is.
Mm-hmm. You rightly say that it is not a surprise. But from your own assessment, this undue pressure on South Sudan to accept U.S. demands on deportees, how would you assess this in terms of just the outlook on putting pressure on African nations, you know, to randomly accept deportees from the U.S.?
I don't think that this is about deportees. I think that there's a lot of symbolism and more things going on in this story. First of all, South Sudan in real numbers is not a country that poses, that has a large amount of visa overstay and people who need deporting from the United States. There are other African countries that are far more delinquent in that sense. Afterwards, one can judge whether you think that is, you know, valid or not. But in reality, South Sudan's not even in the top 10. It is interesting that the Sudan is a country that is in the top 10 of countries that, in terms of overstay, etc. Moreover, it's interesting that Sudan is a country that, according to some leaked and verified plans, and even past plans from the original quote-unquote Muslim ban, which I think was the first executive order under Trump's first regime, first presidency. Also, even going back to the days of George Bush, when the Sudan was in the axis of evil, it's interesting that the Sudan was not the target of their ire at first, but South Sudan. So South Sudan just does not have, neither in percentage nor in real numbers, a significant amount of people to be problematic in terms of immigration to the United States. One thing I can say is that South Sudan was being protected under TPS, you know, temporary protective status. And there does seem to be a certain desire to go after countries that were under the TPS system. But I believe if you look at the list of other countries that were under TPS, there are a few others in Africa and globally, and not just South Sudan. So it's quite odd. South Sudan is also a very low population in general in the world, you know, less than 15 million people. And the majority of South Sudanese people are in sub-Saharan Africa. It's never been a country that has high numbers of immigration going to Europe. So I find the whole thing a bit odd. With this administration, I think anytime you see something that is such a standard, so many standard deviations from the mean, it's really important to begin to say, okay, there's a few outcomes. And you can begin to maybe employ a bit of prospect theory and say to yourself, okay, is this about incompetence? Is this about symbolism? Or is this about something much more deep?
Right. So South Sudan has buckled and accepted the Congolese national. Now, how best could they have handled this? You know, could they have stood their ground or just accept as they did now?
I mean, let's be real. This Trump administration is operating under realpolitik. It's impossible for a country that is as poor and as dependent on, you know, oil, for example. I mean, you know, some people might describe South Sudan as, you know, the Dutch disease in terms of the overdependence on oil. Moreover, that oil is being only exported from the country through the Sudan, which itself is also in a crisis. A poor, landlocked, developing nation is not really going to be able to say, no, don't bring us back this one person. But I think rather than look at why did South Sudan capitulate? Did they, you know, why is the United States insisting that South Sudan is not behaving correctly over the deportation of one person that many people have speculated is not even a South Sudanese national? That's quite odd. There are people from other countries that the United States does not repatriate to, such as Iran, that the U.S. has had absolutely no problem, along with, for example, green card holders and others, has had no problem taking these people out of the United States and sending them to places such as, you know, third nations such as El Salvador or Panama. I think it's if we look at the logic of the current administration, I'm a bit bemused that they were insisting so strongly on sending one person to South Sudan versus the reality that they have other African nations with a very, very high amount of in terms of percentage and in real numbers, much higher amount than South Sudan of overstay, that they've simply deported to Panama, or that may have been picked up and sent to El Salvador. We now know that we're not really sure who exactly has been sent to El Salvador. I think at one point there are people being sent to Guantanamo. So this whole story to me doesn't make sense. And I think we should stop focusing so much on why has South Sudan not accepted a Congolese national.
So if you look at what is happening then, South Sudan is currently under serious tension. Is it fair to deport someone into such a situation, let alone if they are not a nationality of that country?
We want to look at what is fair or sound, what, you know, subscribes to the kind of doom theory or protection-oriented theory from international legal perspective, it isn't normal to send someone who comes from a country like Congo back to South Sudan. In theory, you would say, okay, this person could go to the first safe country that they encountered on their way to the United States or elsewhere. So, I mean, traditionally, that's what you do in migration and refugee laws that you look at. You can say, okay, let me look at the first safe country that this person crossed, and they should be returned there. There was also deals that were made, for example, around the time of repatriating people who had been, for lack of a better term, abducted and taken to Guantanamo. And there was a point in which the United States realized, oh, some of these people are not guilty and we can't necessarily send them back home. So they need to go somewhere else. And as such, third nations were sought. So it is odd to me, the desire to prove a point to South Sudan over a Congolese national when both countries are quite compromised. But I suspect that the real issue and the real story behind this lies in the fact that these are two extremely minerally rich countries, and that we're in the middle of a geopolitical, for lack of a better term, garage sale, or what they might say here in the UK, a car boot sale. And I think the United States has been very open about the fact that it is interested in precious minerals, in resources, in geopolitical power. I mean, if the United States is openly threatening Denmark, you know, in order to take Greenland, where's the surprise that countries like Congo and South Sudan are being, you know, maybe manipulated over their abundant resources?
It would appear that the U.S. is just randomly picking countries where they are sending deportees, just like you said about sending people to El Salvador and other places without checking their nationalities. Did the U.S., do you think the U.S. is doing a good job in terms of carrying out due diligence before they send these deportees in question to any country?
Well, one of the things I'll say is that I think it's quite important to delineate the difference between the United States, because we have to remember that, you know, Donald Trump took office on the 20th of January, I believe, this year. And it's not even been 3 months, I believe, right? So and in the meantime, there has been, frankly, a decimation of the existent federal state. There has been mass layoffs, whether it's aid, whether it's the, you know, I think even Homeland Security. So even the people who decide who's deported, who stays, they're being laid off. Federal judges have been fired. There's a lot of things that are going on that are unprecedented in the history of the United States. So it's very difficult to say, is the United States doing it? Because what's going on now is not normal. And I think it's really important to point that out. And it is real. And there are many federal judges who do not agree with what's going on. And we're seeing the beginning of the kind of end game of the instrumentalization of the Supreme Court, in that there's fights going on between the district courts, the local courts, and the administration and what's left of the State Department and the federal courts about who can be deported, who cannot. So the Supreme Court has now just ruled, okay, Trump can enact this, you know, very old law, Alien Act from the 18th century, to use it to get people out of the country. But the Supreme Court now says, okay, they need to have due process, so you can't just get rid of them. But they still won't allow, they still will not acquiesce to federal judges who are incensed and saying, you must bring back people who've been picked up and sent with no due process for no reason, including people who have not convicted of a single crime. So essentially what we're seeing now is one of the most shocking situations ever in terms of what is going on in terms of refugee law, in terms of, okay, the United States has not signed quite a few international conventions, but even in terms of the general legal precedents of the, you know, the case law of the U.S., what we're seeing now is probably the greatest challenge to the United States since not even civil rights, but since the Civil War. So I think it is difficult to say, oh, they're not checking their nationalities or not. I think the people who go and arrest these people are under orders of the Homeland Security and ICE, being run by people who are loyal to Trump, who are operating as they like. We now know that they've even picked up U.S. citizens and detained them for any amount of time and then have had to release them. So it's impossible to say they're not checking the nationalities. We don't know what's going on. Do you know that the State Department is acting under incongruence, as we saw in the Signal chat, you know, with the NSA and other departments that are operating under a very resource-oriented realpolitik mentality.
So. Mm-hmm. But over now, if you are looking at the bigger picture, what is the implications in terms of the global relations with how the Trump administration is handling all these issues where there's no due processes being done?
One thing I'll say is that I think there might be a bit of a sense of disbelief going on globally where people are having a hard time understanding what's going on. And a lot of that is by design. You know, things are happening so fast and there are so many things happening every day that I think it's simply difficult for people to comprehend just how much the United States, the usual habits of the United States have been undone. You know, I mean, we're talking about things like 80% plus cuts in the aid the United States gives. I mean, that is the entire basis of the soft power of the United States since the Second World War, and especially during the Cold War, gone. So we're talking about people who don't care, people who are treating their closest allies, including allies like Canada and Mexico that have deals with the United States, like enemies. I mean, we know now that there is now a 104% tariff on China. I mean, I've never heard of 100% tariff, but a 104% tariff, I think, is quite something else, right? So we are now seeing a situation in which this administration is moving increasingly towards a regime, and they really do not care. They are unabashedly talking about arresting U.S. citizens and deporting them to El Salvador. That happened last night. They are, you know, talking about military parades on Trump's birthday. The more you listen to it, the more you say, okay, I'm not sure that some of these questions even make sense, because South Sudan is just this tiny little country in Africa, that it's the newest country in the world. You know, we don't know if the reasons for this persecution have something to do with the resource fight that's going on in the region. And I suspect that there is a huge amount of that is involved in that. Personally, I would say if you are a person who follows African geopolitics, look at where the resources are. Okay.
Right. Maybe lastly, how is the revoking of visas to South Sudanese likely to affect those who had started the new life in various states? You look at mostly maybe your basketball players who are within big clubs.
Right. Well, I mean, I just want to add, not just basketball players. I would argue, I'm not sure how much you follow the fashion and beauty industry, which is also worth billions of dollars, but there is a disproportionate amount of South Sudanese fashion models, both male and female. And many of them are South Sudanese passport holders. And this is going to affect things like New York Fashion Week, you know, and these, you know, fashion and beauty industry is worth billions. You know, I mean, look at someone like Rihanna. She made more money in makeup and fashion than she did singing. So the reality is that how is this going to affect things? I think it will definitely hurt the Trump administration. I mean, the fact that the day that Marco Rubio announced this was the same that there was the semifinal of the NCAA basketball tournament, and that the forward of Duke University, which was playing in that final, was a South Sudanese citizen. And people were legitimately asking, I mean, it was even on the news here in the UK, where people were legitimately asking, is he going to be picked up after this game by ICE? And I think that when you make these kind of arbitrary decisions, more realistic for people, where it's their favorite basketball player. And, you know, the passion that fans have for college basketball in America is really huge. And a lot of people for the first time realized how bad this visa thing is. They're like, what does that have to do with this guy who plays basketball for us? He's not a criminal. Why does he have to go? Or what does, you know, my favorite model or Instagram influencer have to do with this? So I think what the administration is doing is a big mistake, because I think they might radicalize some of the younger people. They might radicalize some American people who don't necessarily, who maybe felt like the government was only going after criminals. But now with South Sudanese, it's the first time they said, all of you have to go. And I think American people, I mean, I'm an American, so I'm biased, but I think American people are ultimately quite fair. And I think that people feel a bit shocked that everybody has to go over one guy. Make that make sense, right? So I think it's this kind of punishment in combination with the tariffs and the other behavior is starting to make people question what really is going on. And I also think that there is a lack of understanding from the Trump administration of how many people have a soft spot for South Sudan. There was an incredible amount of outpour of love for the South Sudanese basketball team last summer in the Olympics when they played against the U.S. People were really proud, you know, to see a country when they heard that, you know, the basketball team included refugees and people who played outdoors, right? There was an incredible kind of sense of good sportsmanship. So I think that this is a mistake. It's not a country that has ever done anything wrong to America. It's not. It doesn't even fit the criteria. It's the first country in the world to face this kind of collective punishment. And I think that it was a mistake.
Would you think the Trump administration will reconsider soon about the decision?
Yeah, they will. Of course they will. But the thing about these people... thing about this administration is that they seem to be very, I mean, it's a bit chaotic, right? You know, I mean, if you look at what's going on even with the terrorists, right, it's a bit chaotic.
Abiol Luang Deng, international relations analyst, speaking to DW's Privilege Mushaniri. So what do top officials in South Sudan and civil society groups think about the political impasse between their country and the United States?
The government deeply regrets that despite this history of collaboration and partnership, South Sudan now faces a broad revocation of visas based on an isolated incident involving misrepresentation by an individual who is not a South Sudanese national. Comprehensive verification processes confirm that this individual is a national of the Democratic Republic of Congo named Makula Kintu.
Both Juba and Washington need to provide more information about this particular person, so this person problem that led to the political deterioration between Juba and Washington is properly explained, because we believe there's a lot of secrets behind this particular person in terms of his deportation and rejection or non-acceptance for him to be deported. And I think that also goes together with the frustration of U.S. government on the political development in the country, where our leaders are unable to deliver. And we have seen issues of election, U.S. disappointed, issues of violations of arms embargo, U.S. is disappointed. And we have seen also U.S. disappointed in terms of protection of humanitarian workers, including human rights activists who are at risk. So I think all these have created a pressure that have mounted through this element of deportation, U.S. to make this decision. What we seek more clarity from Washington and from Juba.
When we had this statement, all of us were shocked, because many of South Sudanese, they have their families in America. Also, some of them, they are here in South Sudan. So they used to go and come back. So if there's an issue like this, I think that is going to affect many people in South Sudan.
You've heard the frustrations of civil society groups. We just hope that the parties come to an agreement and sort out their differences. That's it for this edition of Africa Link. Remember, you are not just a listener, but a crucial part of our community, and your engagement can shape the direction of our discussions. We value your insights and encourage you to share your thoughts with us. You can find all of the Africa Link podcast episodes on Spotify and Apple or wherever you get your podcasts from. This episode was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabi. My name is Josephine Mahachi. Thanks for listening. Until the next one, it's bye for now.
DW, made for minds.